Hello, everyone. I'm Gary Urbanowitz, your host for this Throwback FDNY podcast. Remember, you can listen to all of the past episodes of Throwback FDNY by going to the website of the New York City Fire Museum at nycfiremuseum.org/throwbackfdny and choosing the digital platform you use for listening to podcasts. Each show has three segments, going back in time, about the FDNY and its history. Now, let's start this month's show. In this episode of Throwback FDNY, in 1856, the tallest building in the country is destroyed by fire. In 1920, the FDNY Honor Emergency Fund is created. And in 1939, a new apparatus is introduced to provide protection at LaGuardia Airport. The year is 1853. New York is preparing to launch the Exhibition of the Industry of All Nations, comparable to the one held in England 2 years earlier. In fact, New Yorkers honored the legacy of Prince Albert's extravaganza by naming its principal structure the Crystal Palace, the same as the one in London. Right alongside our Crystal Palace was to be a tower taller than any structure in the United States at that time. It was the brainchild of Mr. Waring Ladding and was designed by architect William Naugle. The tower was a wooden structure standing 325 feet tall, surrounded by an iron frame. Two observation decks with telescopes were located at the 125 and 300 foot levels, providing unprecedented vistas. The Crystal Palace was situated on what is now Bryant Park, which at the time was the west side of the Croton Reservoir. The Ladding Observatory, as the tower was known, was at the northeast corner of 6th Avenue and West 42nd Street, extending along 6th Avenue to 43rd Street. When the exhibition closed in 1854, the Ladding Observatory was acquired by Hydeville Marble Works, who shortened the tower by 75 feet. Although they maintained an observation spot at the top, the tower was no longer financially viable solely as a tourist attraction, since it was so far from the epicenter of the city. So, Hydeville used the majority of the building for its marble works. Around midnight, on Saturday, August 30th, 1856, a fire broke out in a two-story, wood-frame commercial building at 49 West 43rd Street, near 6th Avenue. It was occupied by a barrel manufacturer, with its contents being a highly combustible 6,000 complete barrels and a stockpile of wood to make many more. The intense fire spread to numerous adjoining structures, including the famous observatory. The blaze took hold of the tower at 12:37 a.m. It started at the base and climbed to the top in what was described as a sheet of flame, perfectly white. At 12:55, a mere 18 minutes later, the tower collapsed. Fortunately, it collapsed straight down, avoiding falling over and onto the glass-paneled Crystal Palace. Before the fire was over, a total of 12 buildings were destroyed, and another fire was ignited by the flying embers 5 blocks away on 38th Street at 5th Avenue. It, too, was a total loss. As you may recall from our October 2021 episode, the Crystal Palace faced a similar fate when it was destroyed in an equally spectacular fire 2 years later. Of course, we have to mention the actions of the fire department at this conflagration. In those days, alarms were sounded for a fire district that would garner the response of the fire companies in that district. But almost immediately, the extent of this fire required the transmission of a general alarm, pulling in companies from about half of the entire city. And in this case, with flames visible as far away as Putnam County, fire companies and departments from Williamsburg and other areas of Brooklyn also responded, but to no avail.
Hello, this is Patty Murphy from the New York City Fire Museum. The Fire Department of the City of New York has a long history of firefighting, extending back to the days of Dutch colonization and the museum tells this story through our vast collection of objects, memorabilia, and photographs. We depend on supporters like you to assist the museum and its mission to preserve and interpret the history of firefighting in New York City, to care for one of the most important fire memorabilia collections in the United States, and to teach fire safety to thousands of visitors each year. The museum is 100% self-funded through admissions, gift shop sales, programming, and fundraising efforts. You can contribute to our success and sustainability by going to nycfiremuseum.org/donate. We thank you and are grateful for your generous support.
On February 26, 1920, a fire broke out in the drip pan of a large oil tank at the Brooklyn Union Gas Company facility in the South Williamsburg neighborhood of Brooklyn. The flames spread to the tank itself, as well as to other structures in the area. Then, the tank exploded, killing two firefighters instantly and injuring three others. Those three would eventually succumb to their injuries. They were all from Engine Company 251. At the time, the spouses of men killed in the line of duty would receive a pension of only $300 a year from the city, about $4,600 today. This was not enough to live on, even then. Two of the men from Engine 251 were unmarried, but they supported their siblings. Those siblings were not entitled to any financial assistance from the department, nor did any family member that a firefighter might have been supporting. This situation motivated one of the department's supporters, Honorary Deputy Chief William Cohen, to establish a fund to raise money to be used for firefighters or their families who found themselves in a financial crisis. Under the authority of Fire Commissioner Drennan, a committee called the Honor Emergency Fund was formed to start the ball rolling. Literally, the committee organized a series of baseball games, the first being held between the fire and police department teams to raise money for the fund. The first two games were held on September 30th and October 10th, 1920, at Ebbets Field and the Polo Grounds, respectively. They succeeded in raising over $75,000, over $1 million today. The ball games became the main fundraiser for the fund and grew to include games against the Chicago, Detroit, and Los Angeles fire department teams, both home and away. The New York City Fire Museum has some of the trophies won by the FDNY from these games. On March 28, 1921, a deed of trust was executed by William Cohen on behalf of himself and any and all contributors for all funds henceforth collected under the name of the Honor Emergency Fund of the Fire Department of the City of New York. 32 years later, the fund was incorporated by the State of New York. It is a nonprofit entity. The original committee, with Cohen as chairman, was comprised of Commissioner Drennan, the deputy commissioner, three deputy chiefs, a battalion chief, and two captains. This would eventually be changed to ensure that all ranks within the uniform force were represented. In the ensuing years, the composition of the board has been expanded and now includes the chief of operations, chief of personnel, chief medical officer, three honorary officers, and others. A process was established whereby any member of the department or their dependents in dire financial circumstances can apply to the fund for assistance. That application is reviewed by the Board of Trustees, and a determination based on its merits is made to approve or deny the request. All applications and awards are maintained in strict confidence. Assistance has taken many forms over the years. The fund has provided support to many members and their families with unmet medical expenses, particularly in the early days, when such expenses fell to the member. The fund endowed beds at hospitals for the benefit of firefighters. Apparatus, including ambulances, oxygen therapy units, and others, have been made possible through this invaluable resource. Currently, yearly support is given to the FDNY Counseling Services Unit. In 1947, the fund provided assistance in the establishment of the department's medical division at the quarters of Engine Company 30, now the home of the New York City Fire Museum. Over the century plus that the fund has existed, innumerable members of the department have been aided by the Honor Emergency Fund. If you are an employee of the department in any capacity and find yourself in need of the assistance we've just described, you can contact the Honor Emergency Fund's office at headquarters or via their website at honoremergencyfund.org.
Hi, listeners. This is Patty Murphy, the Executive Director of the New York City Fire Museum, the official museum of the FDNY. Mark your calendars for our largest fundraiser of the year. Be part of an extraordinary day filled with camaraderie and support for the museum at the esteemed Muttontown Country Club on Thursday, June 20th, 2024. The festivities will commence at 11 a.m. with registration and brunch, leading into an active day of golf. The grand finale awaits with dinner and drinks at the exquisite club, offering picturesque views of the course. Enjoy a silent auction, raffle prizes, a 50-50 raffle, and much more. As a nonprofit organization, we rely on the generosity of individuals and businesses in our community to help us continue our mission of preserving the history of firefighting in New York City and teaching fire safety to all. We invite you to join us in making a meaningful impact on the museum by participating in this year's event. Sponsorship opportunities are available as well. Visit our website, nycfiremuseum.org, for more information. Thank you, and we hope to see you on the green.
Today, we take for granted the one domestic and two international airports that we refer to as New York airports, those being LaGuardia, JFK, and Newark. But it really wasn't all that long ago, at least from my perspective, that air travel into and out of New York City included these and other small airports. But I'm not going to talk about the history of New York aviation. Rather, I'll start with New York's first official municipal airport, LaGuardia Field. New York's first municipal airport was proposed at Floyd Bennett Field on Jamaica Bay, but early on, it was determined that access to Floyd Bennett's location was too inconvenient for residents and business people going to and from Manhattan. So the site of the North Beach Airport was close to the Midtown Tunnel and the planned highways in the area. The facility was expanded and opened in 1939. The original name, North Beach Airport, was soon changed to honor the mayor that championed its construction and who himself was a pilot, Fiorello LaGuardia. Fire and rescue services were clearly required for the risks posed by aircraft taking off and landing. The dock department, which was responsible for the airport, purchased a fire rescue vehicle. The apparatus was not your typical fire engine. Built by Diamond T, it had as its primary firefighting agent carbon dioxide, since it was anticipated that the source of most aircraft fires would be the fuel, which was high-octane gasoline at the time. It was also equipped with foam, and water alone could also be deployed. One unusual feature of the vehicle was its 5-ton capacity A-frame crane, intended to lift or move all or part of an airplane. It was also outfitted with an assortment of tools, spotlights, and even full-body asbestos firefighting suits. The dock department operated the airport because it was initially built for seaplanes. If you visit LaGuardia today, you may use the original Marine Air Terminal, now known as Terminal A. But the dock department did not have firefighters. Instead, the FDNY detailed 2 firefighters from one of the 4 rescue companies for each 8-hour shift to staff the apparatus. After the 1939-40 World's Fair, one of the Aarons Fox pumpers that was assigned to the fair was converted into an airport crash apparatus and was stationed at the airport in 1941. There's one sad note during this period of the story. In 1941, firefighter Harold Barker suffered a fatal fall in the quarters of the airport crash unit. He was detailed there from Rescue Company 2 in Brooklyn. When the United States entered World War II, the U.S. Army Air Force provided fire protection at LaGuardia. They stationed federal apparatus and military firefighters there. When the war ended, this responsibility and several pieces of apparatus were turned over to the FDNY, which organized Airport Crash Unit 31 as of April 1, 1946. It was comprised of the original 1939 crash unit and 3 apparatus turned over from the Army. A sanitation department sprinkler truck was added later. Unlike before, the department assigned a full complement of firefighters to staff the unit. The department relinquished its fire protection role at the airport to the Port Authority in 1947. At the present time, the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey police staff, equip, and oversee the fire protection at the three airports. And here's an interesting piece of trivia. The FDNY members initially assigned to this unit were ordered to modify their helmet fronts. Officers were to paint a 1/2-inch horizontal black stripe across their original company number. Firefighters were to paint a white stripe in the same way. I have never seen a surviving helmet front like these. I do recall seeing a later helmet front specifically identified from Airport Crash Unit 31 many years ago. Unfortunately, I do not have a photograph of it. If anyone has any of these unique helmet fronts, we at the New York City Fire Museum would very much like to see it for future reference. And now it's time for our throwback FDNY trivia segment. In each new episode of our podcast, we like to test your knowledge of the department by asking a question about a fact from our previous show. Here's this month's. Who was the first female deputy commissioner appointed to the FDNY? The answer can be found in our last episode. And remember, you can listen to that and all of our previous episodes by going to nycfiremuseum.org/throwbackFDNY. The Throwback FDNY podcast is brought to you by the New York City Fire Museum, the official museum of the FDNY, with help from the FDNY and the FDNY Foundation, the official philanthropic organization of the department. I'm Gary Urbanowitz. I'll leave you with this important safety tip. Daylight savings time has just begun, and that means it's time to change the batteries in your smoke and carbon monoxide detectors. If you have one of the newer detectors with non-replaceable batteries, use the test button to ensure that the device is working once a month. Only working smoke and CO detectors can save your life, so please be sure you and your family are fully protected. We could all do our part to be a partner with the fire department by promoting fire safety. Until next time, thank you and stay safe.